The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode is powered by DEN Certifications. You want to deepen your practice or supplement your knowledge for your day-to-day job? You'd be surprised to know how many certifications we do offer. All levels of Reiki, intuitive healing, compassion, animal communications, and of course, our deep 400-hour meditation teacher training program. Go to denmeditation.com and look under certifications for more information. Hey, so we're here with Emily Morwin, who is the co-owner of Modo Yoga LA, which includes Modo Yoga West, soon to open, Modo Yoga East, and Modo Yoga LA, which she opened with her bare hands and spent hours and hours and years there just on her own, like making that thing work. And wasn't it also voted like best yoga studio in LA, like 2013 or something?
It was, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Having my own studio, I just always bow down to Emily because she does it so well. She's formed such an amazing community there and is just so kind and wonderful all at the same time. It's an unbelievable feat for a studio owner. So what you should also know about Emily, she was an actress in her past former life. You had your own show, correct? Like a one-woman show?
Yes, I did.
And she was a singer. You should hear her sing. And you've started like lots of actual fundraisers and charities. I mean, you are this amazing you-do-everything woman and now a mom, just to add on to the list of stuff. So we have a lot to talk about, which is really exciting. So let's start with you're from Canada, which is why you're nice.
Right, totally. It's just a right of being.
Why do people say this? Just everyone in Canada is so nice.
I think that people, my theory is that when people travel, all the nice Americans say that they're Canadian when they're abroad.
That's a good point.
It's like there's this giant population of people that say that they're Canadian and they're just there. So now
Canada's just gotten like
so
real.
Now Canada.
I have to
just
say,
like
every
super
Canadian I've met has been really, really nice. It's actually true.
No, we're pretty nice. We're pretty cool.
And you're from Toronto, correct?
Yeah.
And your family's still there.
My family is still there. My sister's in Boston, but my family, the rest of my family, is still there. Yeah.
So when did you come stateside? When did you come over here?
I moved here in 2007, I think. Yes.
To Los Angeles?
To Los Angeles. That's a story.
And then, well, let's hear it. Go for it. Why did you move here to Los Angeles in 2000?
It.
Why not?
After a giant breakup.
That's usually why people move out, I find. It's either I had a job or I followed a boy or a girl.
Exactly. I was getting away from a boy. And I got my sister to, I was just like, I gotta get out of Toronto. And
how long was this relationship?
4 years.
That's long.
About, yeah.
Living together?
Totally.
So and you were in it.
I was in it. And I just was like, oh my gosh, I gotta get out of here. And my sister drove me across the border into
like
Buffalo.
Like in the trunk?
Literally. And at the border, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go take a yoga class in Buffalo. And I bought a one-way ticket to LA and never went back.
And so did they know you were doing that?
It did. Who know?
Like your family? Or were you literally like, bye?
They knew. I did tell them, but it was pretty shocking.
And your boy, and had you broken up with your boyfriend?
I just left.
So have you spoken to him
yes.
since? Yes. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We bumped into each other.
But how long? So you just left. I'm assuming things weren't great, so we'll just leave it at that. But you just left. How long from when you just left to when you guys actually touched base?
So, funny enough, I remember I left in March of 2007, and then I think I went back in the summer to direct a show, and we actually bumped into each other. So the last time I had seen him was in our house, in our apartment.
So
and I bumped into him.
Please tell me what this conversation was like.
Oh, it was super awkward.
I mean, did he ask, was there ever a why? Or did he, like...
Well, why I left?
Like, did he...
Oh, he massively cheated on me.
So you just like walk, like yeah, you had an like, argument, he cheated on you, you walk, yeah. and you're like, screw you, bye, and walked out.
I was just like, hey, okay, oh my no, gosh. Good. And he was intertwined with all of my friends. So I was just like,
but it wasn't I'm like, going, was I'm he, getting so out of where here. Was he when you walked out of the house? Like, was he sleeping?
Oh, he wasn't there.
I love it. That's what I mean. You actually like snuck there. Out.
I took all my stuff.
Any note?
Probably broke a few things. Nope.
I love it.
No.
By the way, like, he didn't deserve it. What's he doing now?
He
sitting in the corner crying still, 7 years, like,
no,
7 years later.
No, no. He's actually, I think he's bartending. And in fact, I know he's bartending and he's doing the same one-man show that I think he was doing back then.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, your life is so amazing now. You made the right choice. That was a good shift.
I don't think he's going to be listening to this. I'm pretty sure.
But that's such a great story. I love that you just like took off and didn't just leave
the house. You
left the country.
I left the country and then I got here and I was like, oh shit.
Did you know anybody?
I actually did know a few people. I knew like a handful of people. One, quite well. But I knew a handful of people from having gone to school in New York. Years prior, who had since moved to Los Angeles. And so I actually figured it out that I would move in with my friend. I didn't have like a bed or anything.
Right.
Like, and because I, you know, essentially snuck across the border with just carry on like a couple bags, I didn't literally slept like on a sheet on the floor for a few, for quite a while until I got a bed. And I got there and I was like, I got here and I was like, oh, shit, like I don't, what am I gonna do? Like, I've got to figure out how to work.
So what'd you do?
So I was like, okay, well, I know, like, I was a writer and a performer at the time, but I was also teaching yoga. I'd been teaching yoga for a few years, and so I was like, well, I don't have a visa. I hope Donald Trump isn't listening to this. I don't have a visa, so I have to, like, figure something out. So I made some really, really bad posters of, you know, I had the classic ridiculous photo of me doing Natarajasana, which is a yoga pose on a rock, as you do when you're a yoga teacher.
And it's always somewhere gorgeous and slightly dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. And I plastered them all over the city. Like, I went everywhere. And that's how I learned that's how I learned the geography of LA. I was, like, borrowing my friend's station wagon. And I had, like, a paper map. It sounds like I'm, like, 500 years old. I had, like, a paper map.
Thomas
and I was
guide
like,
when I moved out.
Exactly. And I was just like, okay, here. Like, I would just, like, put my finger on a point. And then I was like, hey, I guess I'm driving there. And I would... And I remember, because I for some reason I ended up in Marina Del Rey a lot. I lived on like in West LA at the time, and I would just go around and around this area, and the postman there got to know me, and he'd always make fun of me, be like, "Girl, you keep putting these signs up, and they keep taking them down, and you keep showing up." Like he was like amazed that I kept like.
I love that though.
That I kept putting me. Yes. I was like,
you had no choice.
Desperation but, slash determination.
But let's be honest, there's plenty of people who are desperate
totally.
That don't
yeah.
do that. Like
yeah.
you just kept going and going, and you're like, "I'm gonna make this."
Yeah,
work.
I was like, "This is gonna happen," because I was also pretty determined. Not to work in a restaurant. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I was just like, in fact, I did. I remember it's all coming back to me now. I found a bar. It was like an Irish bar in Santa Monica. Because I was like, I need to like buy a bed, man.
Yeah.
And so I went in. I was like. The Irish bar is going to hire me illegally for sure. So I went in and they hired me, but they were like, no, we have to hire you as a hostess because that's how we do it here. You have to, even though I had years of bartending experience. So I did that, and it was I think 4 hours later that I was like, I was like, I'm sorry, I have to leave now.
Oh my God.
I can't do this.
Escape number two.
And I walked out and I was like, I think I went to the ocean because I used to go to the ocean a lot in the beginning. Be like, what am I going to do? And then a few
now, when
tears,
you were there, so how like, long before? So wait, so you plastered all these?
I didn't
things
think we
up.
Were going to be talking about this, by the way.
I know, I mean, I love this. So you plastered all these things up, and then I think it's just you plastered all these things up, and then you. What were you trying to get? Privates or
privates? Yeah.
Okay, so how many were you generating?
So
was it working? I guess is the question.
It did work, but I actually got a few really great privates and also got really scary situations.
I mean, I'm loving this.
Like,
this is like Craigslist,
actually,
but it's your
try,
version of Craigslist.
I actually have a really I haven't even thought of this
tell
story
us your creepiest.
In so long, but there was I have two. Okay. I'm actually not sure I can remember all the details, but I'm going to try. So I got a call from a guy who was in Santa Monica, and I was like, oh yes. It came at a time where I was like, oh, I really need to have another private. And so he called me up, and I went, we had a phone conversation beforehand, and he had told me he was a doctor and he was looking for yoga, and I was like, oh, this is perfect. And so I went to his house, and he I knew there was just something odd. I had this odd feeling. He had this treadmill set up on the porch, and he was like racing on this treadmill on the porch. And I don't know why that was weird to me, but it was. It just, I guess, doesn't sound weird. But then
well,
I went
also
into
right
his house.
Right before you were going to do yoga.
Right before I was going to do yoga. And then I walked into his house, and it was completely littered with garbage.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, this is odd. And so when we, I was like, I think let's do it on the beach. Let's do our session on the beach
Smart.
Today. So we went to the beach, and we finished our session, and he ended up paying me with a check. And when I went to the bank to cash the check, the woman at the bank was like, this person doesn't exist. So I was like, okay, well, he had given me a card. So I went to the address where his business, he's like, that's right. He's like, if you have trouble with this check, reach out to me and I'll fix it. And so I reached out to him and I called, and it was it was a psychiatric care unit. And the woman was like, the woman who answered the phone was like, no, come by. She said, come by. This we might have
was
to
he
edit
a
this.
Was I'm he actually, a doctor for?
So
or
he,
was he in it?
So I found out. Ultimately, I found out. I went to the place because he. I guess he had said to go to the place to pick up the check. So I went there, and the woman was like, "No, he's a patient."
Oh God,
he's a patient.
He was like an outpatient.
Yeah, which was So
did you at least get paid? Was the check?
No,
no,
no, no, no, no.
So you
no,
went the whole
it
thing.
It was the whole just... thing. It was crazy. Which was. So
LA, I'm sure so many cities are like this, but LA really does have so many stories when people first move out here and you're just either meeting new people or trying.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember mine too, where I was in, I don't remember where I was, and someone kept coming up to me being like, I want to photograph you. It was so weird. Please, 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 I want to photograph you. And I was already like, this is weird, but it'd be nice to make some money. So I begged my roommate. I'm like, I'm clearly not going by myself. You need to come with me. She's like, fine. And we went in. And the good news was he was actually a photographer. The weird thing about it was when he showed me all of his photos, they were all just nipples, like nipples, 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 nipples everywhere.
Hilarious.
And he was like, so whenever you're ready for me to photograph you, you let me know. And I'm like, great, I'll let you know. Thanks. And walked out. And by the way, it was so early into me being in LA. My roommate and I barely knew each other. It was like one of the first things I ever asked her to do for me. We were probably like a few weeks into our relationship. So I had to like get that one for a while. She
That's
was always
amazing.
Like, nipple.
I love that,
like,
there's no easing into it. I love that there's no, like...
He had no shame, which I appreciate. I did actually. I did tell her, at least he was a photographer. Like, part of me was a little nervous it would be you're walking into a crazy situation. And I was so thankful I brought her. But, I mean, he was so proud of all the nipples. And some of them were beautiful. But I was like, my nipple's not going to be... Like, it's just not happening. I was like, did you look? I barely have any boobs. Like, not worth it.
Maybe that was his thing.
But it was a little odd. But so we all have these stories when you first move. Because you're trying. And it's like, you don't want to... Like, you want to be safe. But you don't want to not do things. Because you need to make money and you need to figure it out. And so that's crazy, though. So you plastered. So you were getting some work. It wasn't a ton, but you were making a little bit of money. And so then how did, like, the ball start rolling for you?
So, well, you mean in terms of the studios?
No, I mean, like, so you're out here. You're sleeping on a sheet on the floors. You're plastering. You're getting privates. What do you feel like was the moment for you that you could get a bed?
Okay.
How about that?
Well, I think I just ended up putting it on. Credit card. Wait, did I have a credit card? I probably didn't actually have it. Actually, yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't have a
credit
card. We
block out certain times of...
I couldn't get one. Well, what had happened, actually, and I think this is, like, a part of how I became an entrepreneur. This is, like, I don't even know if we can hear this.
No, but this is what I'm asking, because I, like, do feel like you have a certain... But, you can tell you have a skill set that you've always had, which is just keep going.
Right, just, yeah, exactly.
Perseverance.
Energizer bunny. So my roommate at the time, this... I'm going to tell the story of how I got my visa.
Done.
Because this is kind of like, this is kind of how... This was the skill, I think, that carried me through into owning businesses. So I, like, there was no rhyme or reason why I should have had a visa. In fact, lawyers told me, like, there's no way. Like, before I left, so I was like, okay, I guess I'll just go and figure out when I get there. And at
You're
the
right.
time,
let's hope Trump's not listening to this.
See, that's the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Donald Trump, do not listen to this podcast. That would be awesome if he was.
I know, I would, and then we're gonna get hate mail in 0.2 seconds.
So, so anyway, she at the time was trying to be a producer, my roommate, and so I found this immigration lawyer in New York who I've been working with ever since. He's amazing. I've never actually met him, but he's done, like, probably 50 visas for me over time. Anyway, he was the first person who was like, yeah, we can totally do this. And I was like, I like you. We are working together forever. And basically he was like, okay, get me everything that you've ever done since childhood, like anything creative. So I was like, thank God my parents are, like, hoarders of playbills and all kinds of things. So I dug through all of that. He ended up compiling this hilarious case of, like, this work that I had done. And then I had had my one woman show where luckily I had gotten quite a bit of, press. So he was able to compile this thing that made me look... they call them extraordinary ability visas, which is
also
kind
Trump
of
would
funny.
Actually agree.
Yeah,
he'd be
exactly.
Fine with this.
Yeah. So it was legit. And then my roommate at the time was trying to be a producer, so she was. So he was like, okay, well, she's gonna sponsor you. Anyway, she ended up doing her first movie and got an investment. Of $200,000 to do this movie from someone that she knew. And the money went into the account. And so it was there for maybe a week. And so at that time, my lawyer was like, okay, we have to expedite right now. And so he created this amazing, elaborate thing where I was going to be working for this production company as a director, a writer, an editor, a... dramaturg, like
everything.
A performer, all of these things, because, like, in my one woman show, I did all of the things. So he was like, "This is perfect," and so because the money came through for this short window of time, and because we expedited, I got this visa. So
that's amazing.
It kind of is miraculous in a way, and then so I had to my roommate and I had to create a payroll system And also all my private yoga clients went through this production company.
I'm like, so I had to really pay. I was
paying workers' comp and like all of this stuff.
In a weird way, though, it made you more legitimate than anybody else out there.
Yeah, like, and also flat broke.
Yeah, I'm sure, cause it's
because
it's so expensive.
I was like, I was paying literally like everything because I
wasn't
making
But you were way more legitimate.
Very,
yeah,
I was actually quite legitimate, except that I was like, and then to open the yoga studio, the same lawyer once I did that, he was like, okay, well. He's like, we need to go the route of like, we've got to prove that because of your acting, because you've already got this, like this visa, we've got to funnel that into what you're doing now. So he created a case to say that because I'm opening up a yoga studio in Los Angeles, like I have to, as a yoga teacher, I'm the only person who can do it because I have to be able to speak to Hollywood. I have to be able to communicate.
Ooh, I like him. He is good with his
to
angles.
Hollywood and writers. So he basically lumped this other visa and the storyline that went into that into why I was the only person that could open up this yoga studio.
So you were telling, you were telling an actual story, which
yeah,
is good, a linear
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's funny because weirdly, he put it out there because Moto is, I mean, not that you ever talk about it this way, and it's more than that, but a lot of Hollywood does go to Moto. I see it all the time because you guys are next door to us. So that's weird. Maybe he put it out there and
that's
then
funny.
It happened.
Yeah, that's funny.
But it's
maybe,
true.
Maybe.
I was about to tell a story that we probably shouldn't tell about one of our run-ins with Hollywood outside of our studios.
Oh, yeah.
We'll ixnay it. So I want to have a question with you about spirituality and your course and the fact that you were this actress, but what actually helped you get financially stable and a visa was really the yoga and the acting simultaneous. So when do you feel like the roles actually switched for you, or have they? Are you still an actress and you're still like, you know what I mean? When do you feel like your identity might have switched?
Yes.
Or how does it play into who you are now?
Yeah. There was a moment actually where I had been doing my one woman show and I had completed it, and I'd been working on it for years actually and doing it in various states and cities in Canada as well. The last time that I had done it actually in LA, when I was through with it, I was sort of like, I think I'm done with this for a while. It came to the point where I was, the next step would have been to go out on auditions and stuff like that. And I was like, I just am not inspired to do that. And what I realized what I loved about it was collaboration and storytelling and this process of finding, of accessing authenticity and a voice in me, and then also working with others too, and then in the characters that I was creating. So at the same time, around the same time, my amazing partner Dina reached out to me, who I had known for years prior, and was like, okay, are you ready to do this with me? And we had been talking about it for years, and I think I just didn't think that that was the right fit for me, like running a business. I never thought that that was like my path. So I'd always said, you know, no, not me. I even at a certain point tried to get a then boyfriend to take it on. He was a yoga instructor. And but anyway, I'd finished this show, and I was like, I should say yes to this. This has been coming up a lot. I should just say yes. And so I did. And I remember at the time I was working with a meditation teacher up in the hills, and we were meeting at least every month, but sometimes more. And I remember saying to her, like, okay, this thing has come up and I'm going to do it. And I know myself, and I know that I will try to straddle both worlds, and I'll try to like do everything. And I had a sense that if I was going to be successful, I had to go all in on the yoga. I just had to funnel whatever energy that I was, you know, using to do one woman shows and whatever hustle I was on. And I had to just dive in. And I remember saying that to her, and I was like, I'm so scared of this. I'm so, so terrified. And but I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it for 5 years, and I'm going to go all in. And I remember that moment, and it was, I just decided.
And so with the fear, was there relief or all fear or?
I wish I could say yes, but it was.
And have you ever looked back? Like, do you ever feel like you let go of part of you, or do you feel like that's still part of you?
That's a great question. I don't feel like I let go of part of me. I think that it's all I think it's the same. I think it's, yeah, there's times when I miss the days of like getting into like a community center room and just playing, you know, with a fellow, you know, performer, you know, whether that's directing or being the performer. Like I miss those kind of like ridiculous, silly days. But actually I find that there's a lot of that.
I was going to say, you now, find a lot of silly actually. Days. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot of the same, it's a lot of the same skills. And I find that teaching is, for me, it's very aligned. Like I'm not so much the type of yoga teacher who's really focused on like, getting to a certain pose. Although I think that's fun, but it's the same kind of goal, which is how do you teach from a place of like truth, and how do you inspire the students to actually tap into their truth? So it's actually the same.
It's funny because I feel the same way when I changed my like careers too, and everyone was like, is it weird? Do you miss it? And I'm like, I still get to do all the like things that I love doing, the creative part of that job. Yeah. And same thing, I always describe my job as finding the best voice in people, mm-hmm. whether through the projects, through the writers. And I feel like that's what I'm doing now too. So it's weird. I always feel if people can get comfortable and figure out who they are, there's so much you can do with that skill set.
Yeah, and I think you and I have talked about this before, but it's like, you know, the vision really of the studio and what I feel like I'm up to on a daily basis is like, I want people to connect with their most authentic selves. And like, whether that is a mom or whether that's a dentist or, you know, like, you know, those are obviously like really broad terms, but like, whatever excites them most to tap into, to drop into that and to let that resonate in their voice and what they do and how they move and breathe. And to me, that actually is the most exciting thing. So it's the same.
Right. And I love that you're saying that, because that's so much of what this podcast is about, is like, when you figure out who your authentic self is, who did you not necessarily become because you were always it, but where did you fall into? And that's kind of what you're saying is, mm-hmm. it brought you to opening up all these amazing yoga studios and creating this community. And now you're a mom, which is unbelievable. But was that something you always wanted to do as well? Or you always knew you wanted? Or was that later in life?
I think I always, you know, deep down thought that was in my path. But I never could comprehend how that would look, especially, you know, in some of those earlier phases where I was like, you know, sleeping on the floor and stuff. I was like, well, that wasn't really on the radar at that point. But like, definitely, well, I ended up getting pregnant accidentally, you know, a few years ago. And it was the miscarriage that I had where I realized how much that was something that I wanted. I think the idea that it wasn't necessarily a given, you know, that I could just snap my fingers and be like, okay, now I'm ready.
It's like you thought, if I ever decide I'm ready,
exactly,
it'll just happen. And then all of a sudden it happened and then didn't.
And then it didn't. Yeah. Yeah. So at that point is when I was really committed / I think I went down the rabbit hole.
I think a lot of women, I mean, I look, that same thing for me too, since I struggled. How do you feel like, especially because you were in the middle of your business and in this world of wellness and spirituality, mm-hmm. how do you feel like you balance that with your struggle? Do you feel like there were, like you said, rabbit hole right now? Do you feel like you lost moments of it?
I did a really bad job, I think,
you think?
In that time. Yeah, I think I was really, I had a hard time during that period. I guess it's mean to myself to say I did a really bad job, so maybe I'll take
no,
that
but
back.
But it's honest.
I think I fumbled through it, for sure.
In what way? What do you mean by that?
It was stressful. It was a stressful time, and I think I had I was learning so much in the business at the time. Like I was making a lot of mistakes at that time, and my life certainly did not have room at that time for a baby. So it was simultaneously a process of like how to re-navigate through and how to reestablish, time management and like boundaries inside of business, while at the same time moving through a really emotional process of trying to figure out how to have a baby, which had a lot of fear wrapped into it. I think they both did. I felt like I didn't know what I was doing for about 2 years there.
Yeah, it was like you were in your mind at that point in the business struggling emotionally, and then you were struggling emotionally at home. So it's just you're like,
yeah.
And then you feel like you're not going to get either, and it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like? So for you, you said it was like time management. Do you think it was just time for you to process it and like process the loss and then actually come to terms with what you wanted? Or how do you feel like you finally kind of climbed your way
out?
Yeah,
well, so that energy that I tapped into, I think, to get the business going, was a little bit like, yeah, that tunnel vision. And it's a little bit of a survival kind of
I've said
mode.
It to so many people.
Yeah, and it requires, I think, a little bit of crazy. And I think I was on the hamster wheel of that, and I was, you know, like you said, like it was the hard thing is that it often works, but it only works for so long until you have to actually like ground and balance and
grow,
take some breath.
Yeah.
So I think that energy then got transferred into, you know, when the idea of having a baby was potentially taken away. Like it was questioned, you know, it wasn't a given. Like I said, I became a little bit attached and obsessed with that idea.
Isn't it so interesting how that happens?
Yeah. So, it was almost like this like quest to figure out what was wrong with me.
Mm-hmm. I know I always said that for me too. I laughed that before I even started that journey, I was always okay adopting. I always said I'd want to adopt at some point in my life, whether it was second child or first child. That was always something I was going to do.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden when I was struggling with my own fertility and not being able to do it myself, it became this like primal need to have my own biological child.
Right.
And I remember being like, my brain part would stop and be like, what's wrong with you? You actually don't care. But then it just becomes this like game with yourself where you feel like you're losing, so you have to win. And it's so bizarre because I would always remind myself, no, before this all started, you wanted. And that's eventually where we got to. And I have the most amazing daughter, and I wouldn't change a thing.
She's
I mean,
perfect.
She's really pretty great. And I would never go back and do it a different way if I even had the choice. But it is interesting how psychologically you get into this need, want, that's actually not your true self at all and not really what you believe or think, but you just, and it's hard for women. We have a clock, whether we like to admit it or not, we do. And so when the clock gets louder ticking and then things aren't happening, it does. It really just changes, I feel like, the whole way you associate yourself with it when you're actually in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, 100%. And I remember the shift. He asked me about when that shifted. It was around the time I had gone to like, you know, the Chinese doctors and even fertility, because I had had two miscarriages and then my doctor at the time really actually did. I felt like she did sort of look at me like there's something wrong. In fact, she was like, we have to figure this out. And she sent me to a fertility specialist. And that's, and it was nothing against her, but that's when I started to, it all became way more clinical and scary.
Numbers. Percentages.
And I think I put myself through a lot of guilt about like having been so wrapped up in starting the business and that was all consuming and it still at the time was. So I went through all kinds of stuff and I was making these ridiculous, not ridiculous, I'm sure they probably worked in some way, but like it, like 2 hours to make teas and brew these things and then like going to get acupuncture.
You jumped on the train.
I read the books. I like got rid of plastics and right. Like Coke was like taking CoQ10 and all the things. And who knows?
Only having sex at this time this time. And
I mean, yeah, that is.
The whole thing is crazy.
It's nuts. And it's a very, very, very fear-based.
But you said something interesting. And again, not that I'm a women all the time. But it is true when you said I felt guilty about putting so much into the business. Mm-hmm. And I've been there too where I was like, oh, God, I felt guilty. I took this on and I felt guilty. I did this. And did mm-hmm. I, mm-hmm. you know, if you believe in there's only so much energy and then the pizza pie mm-hmm. is filled with this, you only mm-hmm. have this much. Of course you're struggling having a child. And I used to just sit there and be like, a man would never feel this. And they have no clue. How much that sucks to feel that, where you feel like major choices that you made for yourself yeah. could hinder a whole nother major choice of something you want in your life.
Yeah.
It's just interesting, and they'll never, yeah. that's just never on them.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, totally.
But it just then, I think, goes into your fear because you feel like you're the one who has to drive the train yeah. or is responsible for it if you're in a partnership.
Yeah, it was like a lot of putting a lot of pressure and guilt and all of the things on myself, which obviously is never helpful. But there was a shift. I went to see this this acupuncturist actually right down the street on Wilshire, and she was just super cool and badass. She was in her 40s, I'm gonna say, and she had a baby a little bit later in life and. She was just really chill. She's like, don't worry about the numbers. And she's like, you know, just like make sure you're drinking. She's European, of course. She's
love
like,
it.
Make sure you're drinking wine.
And I'm a big believer too. I think you and I had that conversation.
And she's like, yeah, just you know, try to relax. So then these acupuncture sessions ended up being like
therapy.
A time to meditate and yeah. a time to rest. And yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the secret concoction ended up being.
But you have the most amazing daughter, too.
Oh, she's so cute.
Oh, she's amazing. So great.
Yeah, she's awesome.
How do you feel like it's changed you now as a business owner? And you've since mm-hmm. you've had her, you have expanded to other ownerships. It's not like you're just readjusting to one scenario. You've actually been growing and expanding. So how mm-hmm. do you feel like it's changed the way you operate in that, or has it not?
It definitely has, because there's this new priority. I think the biggest thing for me is that I feel like she is a mirror. Like she mirrors. I look at her, and I have this really big sense of. Like that she's watching me, which she is. So I feel like responsible for you know whatever patterns that I you know want to move through and kind of yeah get whatever patterns I want to move through. I feel like that is like more relevant and more immediate because she's watching me. I feel like I'm teaching her as I'm doing everything, right?
And so, we are. That's what's so crazy. Yeah. But it's so funny that you say that. So to tie it back in to the beginning, because one of the things you said a while ago that I wanted to go back to was the hamster wheel of opening up a business and the survival mode that you get in, because I 1,000% understand that. And one of the things I was going to ask you, but I'm going to tie it into what you're talking about with your daughter, is how you kept your practice or your spirituality mm-hmm. or yourself grounded in that, because it is very difficult to do when you are in that hamster mm-hmm. wheel. But I find it interesting as just a comment that your daughter actually kind of easily makes you figure that out for yourself because you're like you said, you see her watching you.
Yeah.
But how did you then do it back then in the survival mode and the hamster wheel of it all? I just think it's interesting for people who are thinking about opening a business or have just started opening a business. It's more than just having an idea.
Yeah.
There's a lot of execution and a lot of survival mode, which I like how you put it, that goes into it.
Yeah. So how did I...
Did you feel like you balanced yourself well at that point? Or I mean, my answer is no. My answer is no. I would say it honestly.
No,
it
was... I mean, I had moments for sure. But I was... Yeah, like a lot of adrenaline, a lot of passion, which is necessary. It's like
necessary.
Actually not... I don't think... You can't start a business... Well, I don't know the answer to this, but I felt like the passion and the adrenaline and the hamster wheel, even to an extent, like that made a lot of shit happen.
I agree.
I've never met anyone who's been like super 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 balanced every step of the way, like up to big things, and no, it was like tons of risk taking, we went in, we had the space next door, like a couple months after we opened, it opened up and we were like, well, we want to outgrow our space. So do we take this opportunity? It's now or never potentially.
Right.
And we did. And it was like, we were, you know, 5 months into being open, we were in a build while open, which
I was like, it's insane.
It is insane.
And if you have any business acumen, you're fearful because you're like, I shouldn't necessarily be doing this if you're just looking at numbers. But my instinct is telling me I really need to do this.
Yeah. But then it's like, you know, it's that as I think when you find the deepest practice is because you push yourself to these limits, and limits isn't just like in a pose where you're like, oh my God, I can't do this, or you know, you fall out of it or whatever. It's like those moments where you're like, oh my God, I can't do this, like, how am I going
to
do this?
You just have to.
And you have to. And so for me, like, I had a lot of times where I actually listened to a lot of guided meditation, laying down and just stopping. I did a lot of shavasana, and singing was a big thing for me too.
Well, you were such a beautiful singer, and that was such a surprise for me that I had no clue. Oh. I mean, anyone here, if you ever have a chance, like sometimes at Moda Yoga, they actually, her and her partner or you yourself will actually sing to the practice, right? I mean, you make it's so amazing. And
thank you.
And so I love that you just said that was kind of part of your own self-practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was it the vibrations, or was it just the release, or the not thinking about?
Yeah, I think, I mean, singing has always been the thing that gets me to ground the fastest. Like I feel a sense of peace, I guess, when especially if I can sing with somebody. I love harmonies
and me too.
Yeah. So it was really amazing to get to do that with Dina, who's my, like I said, my amazing partner, and you know, we would sing a lot. We would do, you know, we would just get together in her backyard and sing, especially when we were really scared. And she was less, I think, less afraid than me. I think she was had a little bit more fearlessness than me. But we would just sing together for hours.
So do you think that's a big part of opening a business, just fearlessness?
Well, I don't think it's realistic to be fearless, but it's, yeah, you just have to keep, you have to just do it anyway. In fact, we, you know, the whole campaign that we created around Sweat for Change, which actually we haven't talked about, but that's okay. It was a whole campaign where we were raising funds for to bring music back into public schools in Los Angeles. And
we raised over like $300,000. Right?
Yeah, in the span of two campaigns. But we were like, how are we going to get people to commit to 30 days, because it was a 30-day challenge, and also we had high goals of like fundraising. So it was really like there was a roadblock when we would talk to people, and they, you know, it was like all of the excuses that we all have. It's like, oh, well, I have a job, I've got kids, and I don't have time to do this, blah blah blah. And so we created a whole thing around this kind of slogan of like, but I'm doing it anyway. So we allowed people to say like, well, these are all the reasons why, and but I'm doing it anyway. And so it's kind of that idea of like, yeah, there's no logical way that this functions. Like, there's no clear path.
But I'm doing it anyway.
But I'm doing it anyway. So like that kind of just applied to.
But that's such a beautiful message, I think, for everyone, period, in life. Mm-hmm. I think fear just really paralyzes people. Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting for people to just hear someone like you who's literally plastering their face all over LA because you didn't have a bed to sleep on.
Mm-hmm. Or a visa.
is successful and has a family and is happy. And it's because you will just keep trying and you will, you know, you'll do it anyway, which mm-hmm. I think is so great. It's not that you were handed all of this. You worked for it.
Mm-hmm.
You worked your butt off,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is amazing. No, it is, because I do. I feel like people always ask, but how did you do it, or how can you do it? And yeah, I'm sure there's a million books out there everyone can read, but a lot of it is just determination and sticking to it and believing that you can do it.
Mm-hmm. And usually, if you go the route of what you'll read in a book, you're it doesn't. I don't know. I feel like that's what everyone else is doing.
I know.
So it's almost better if you, in a way, like have the mentality of, but I'm doing it anyway, and you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
And you have to figure it out. Because I think that's when you get
I have more creative. Fun doing that for me.
Yeah,
I'm always totally. Like, I have no clue what I'm doing.
Yeah,
so
yeah, exactly.
It's more fun to fail, I feel like, in that realm
yeah.
because there's no comparison. Otherwise, right. it's like, well, then how did you not know?
Right.
Like,
yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Like, nobody knows. I'm
exactly.
just
going to
fail
I think,
and
yeah.
learn from it.
Yeah, it might be more. It might be harder actually if I like had a business degree and then like tried to set out to do X, Y, Z and because I'd maybe put more pressure on myself.
Me
I don't
too.
Know.
Yeah, me
I'm
too.
Not sure.
Well, this has been amazing. I love all your story. I could talk to you for like another
I know.
Hour, by
right.
the way. And we will.
Yes. To be continued.
To be continued. But I do want to leave it here because I do think that's such a nice message and such an uplifting thought for people to realize like really anybody can do anything with their lives if they put their minds to it. I mean, go get your face plastered all over. Maybe mm-hmm. not today's day and age. But
yeah.
still. So I would love to just ask just a few questions that you can just like dart through just for everyone. So what is your daily practice now?
I try to get to my mat, whether it is at the studio. I mean, ideally it's at La Brea or East. And if I can't, it's ideally 15 minutes at least in my house. And then sometimes that if it's not on my mat, if what I need more on that day is a meditation, and then that's what it is. And I love guided meditation. So, yeah.
And then what spiritual book or podcast is like one that you go to?
Mm-hmm. Well, anything that Pema Chodron has ever written is like, I just also love her voice. I really, really connect with her and have been listening to her and reading her for, I don't know,
years
10
then, yeah.
years. So that, she, I think she's incredible. And then I also have, like, you know, read all of Jon Kabat-Zinn's books and listened to his meditations and really love him. And then, yeah, for physical asana, I often, if I'm going to do it at home, like, and do a guided practice, it'll be Annie Carpenter, sometimes Sean Korn, I really like, or sometimes it'll be just, yeah, by myself, do my own thing. Yeah.
I love that. Is there a documentary or movie that resonates with you?
Yeah, this is hard. I actually love documentaries so much, so there's so many. But I'm gonna say that I was really impacted slash inspired slash a little bit paralyzed, I'm gonna be honest, by An Inconvenient Truth. I haven't seen the sequel, but I'm really looking forward to seeing it. But yeah, there's so many documentaries that I really love.
Agreed. Is there, I think you kind of answered this. I was going to say, is there a teacher you follow? Would you think that's like Annie or Sean?
Yeah. I wouldn't say that there's any teacher that I follow. I think if I were to name one yoga teacher that has inspired me the most, ever, like over the years, and that would be my partner, actually, Jess.
Yeah,
that's really sweet.
I'm gonna cry.
she's incredible, and she's the co-founder of Moto International, she's just a phenomenal human and a phenomenal yoga teacher in the room, on the mat. And then also I learned so much about yoga through the way that I see her navigate through business and navigate through personalities, and how she hosts a dialogue, a meeting, a discourse, a disagreement. And so she's someone, yeah.
And that's all part of it.
Yeah, it's all the same, yeah.
So is there something you wish you knew before, let's say before you crossed the border? In Buffalo?
No, thank God I didn't know what I know now. Otherwise, I would have done none of it.
That's a great answer.
I'm grateful that I didn't know anything and that I was just like, yeah.
Like,
yeah. If I...
Ignorance sometimes really is bliss.
Yeah.
It's true.
Totally.
Well, thank you so much. You guys should check out Emily at Moto Yoga LA. Is there anything else you want me to plug for you guys?
Well, that we're, yeah, you already said it. We're about to open Moto Yoga LA West.
And they just opened up Moto Yoga East, which the Den actually has a pop-up in. So that's actually been really fun. So good. And that space is beautiful, unbelievably gorgeous.
Yeah.
And has good parking.
Yeah, it does have good parking. And I guess, we have something coming up, which is really awesome, that we're going to be doing with all of the Moto Studios worldwide, which is called Speak Your Peace. And we are raising... funds for Amnesty International, and we're actually, the goal is to on the mat inspire a practice of Shavasana, so stillness and silence, over the course of 30 days, 10 minute Shavasana every single day. So it starts and ends with a yin and sound bath practice.
So nice.
And it'll be a real collective effort. So that's happening in September. So if you've never been to the studios, join.
That's a big deal.
It's a lot of studios.
On the lines of speaking about your business, can you tell people a little bit about like what makes Moto different than other yoga studios?
Okay, so I think what makes us different is that we're really, really, really accessible. I think the goal has always been for us that whenever somebody walks through the door, they are met with total acceptance and friendliness, no matter what. So if it's the person who has the perfect quote unquote yoga clothes and a yoga mat, great. And then if it's the person who just finished smoking a cigarette and yelling on their iPhone outside, it's like we're gonna treat them the same. What I love, I just always get so moved when I see a class, and we have a lot of these where it's just so diverse. We'll have a room full of people, and it'll be, people who are in their early 20s and into their 70s, 80s, and all different demographics, different cultures, and that to me is really, really, and different abilities, and they're all kind of breathing and moving together, which is really, really exciting to me. And
that means you guys are successful at what you put out to do, because mm-hmm. that means everyone feels very comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk a little bit about the hot yoga aspect of it.
Yeah, So we are we're hot yoga, and we use a form of radiant heat, and yeah, it's amazing. We've actually in LA we started to build by accident rooms with really high ceilings, which has now become a little bit of a signature for us. So it feels, you know, the way that we heat the rooms is really is like a really, really nice system where you never feel like it's hard to breathe. There's a really good air exchange, and then add to it natural light and these high ceilings, and it's a beautiful experience, and it's a, you know, it's a wonderful sweat. And yeah, I love practicing in the heat.
Why do you love practicing in the heat?
There's a real detoxification that I think happens. Just the other day, we were chatting about this. Actually, there's been studies that have shown that they've done a lot of testing on sweating, and what they found is a lot of chemicals that come out in the sweat. Obviously, the main detoxification happens with breathing. But there are traces of chemicals that come out in through sweat. It also helps to loosen some of the muscles. So I find that it can help with just softening into some of these poses, as opposed to having to sort of force yourself. Obviously, you never want to be forcing yourself in a yoga practice. But then the other element is that there is an intensity to it that for me, and I think a lot of people can identify with this, helps you to surrender. Because you're, it's another challenge. I always say that practicing yoga is about, you know, meeting challenge and getting to know yourself inside of those challenges. So whether that's like the challenge of a shape that you're trying to get your body into, whether it's the challenge of, you know, busy, obsessive mind, or the challenge of heat, all these things that these conditions that take you to an edge so that you can practice breathing and softening in that edge. So obviously there's a intensity to heat that is, you know,
now that did you always practice hot? Like, what was your first yoga experience?
I guess my first yoga experience was not in the heat, but the first time that I really, really, really ever felt a deep ability to relax in Shavasana, a deep peace, was in a hot class. And I think there's something about that the ability to, you know, tap into that, the energy and the heat and the fire that allows you to also drop into a deep stillness and a deep rest. And it also helps with the cardiovascular system. I mean, yeah, your heart is beating faster. Like, so it's really good for people who actually need a little bit more of that intensity in order to soften.
Right.
But for me, the goal is always that, like, you know, ultimately you're leaving with a little bit more peace than when you came in.
And so I know community is really big for you. It's one of the things you said you loved about, you envisioned for it. So talk about the community at Modo.
It's the community at, well, so I'll talk about the greater community because we extend out into this really incredible group of now 80 studios that spans globally. We started in Canada. We're all independently owned, but we're truly a collective. We meet, all the studio owners get together every year at this, like, basically this YMCA camp.
That's so fun.
in Ontario in Canada, and we talk about what's going on. We come together to make decisions. We vote on absolutely everything, which is very Canadian. Literally, we end the day with a bonfire and sing sing-alongs.
Yeah, I love it.
But like, we we are
it's a yoga retreat.
It kind of is. It is. It's funny. We have like, you know, sharing circles, lots of tears, and but it's a community of sharing. We're a community of activists as well, I would say. It's really cool having this now such a large community. We can come together. We have two, I think I mentioned the campaign Speak Your Peace, which is with all of the studios. We all come together. But then there's another one that we call Grow Your Yoga, which usually happens in April. And we choose a cause, and it's usually environmentally based. We're really passionate, obviously, about addressing global warming, and we'll tap into the efforts of each individual studio and the communities of those studios, and we come together in this like effort to bring awareness and education and funds oftentimes to address a common goal.
It's so nice that every micro community is part of a macro community. Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting. And not every studio has that. The fact it's not just the people on La Brea or in East, they all have each other and then internationally.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, just talking about Speak Your Peace, which is coming up next month, it's just really, it's amazing to think that there are 80 studios around the world on International Day of Peace all practicing. Like, we all do a class on
same time
on International Day of Peace, and it's a candlelit class, and that's, I don't know, there's something really
very
inspiring to me
too.
That where everyone is like coming together in breath and coming together in a common, you know, vision to create change in ourselves, and then also have that change ripple out into the world.
As a business owner, this must be the stuff you live for, because mm-hmm. even though you work in a spiritual wellness world, it doesn't mean it's not a business and there's not, you know, the daily mm-hmm. heartache of a business sometimes. Mm-hmm. So this must be the stuff that's always just super, like, you're just so excited about.
Yeah. Oh, those are the moments for sure. There's so many where it's like, oh, yeah, this is... I just feel so lucky to get to do this. Because I think community is such a huge part of what we do, aside from as well as hot yoga. Like, that's hot yoga is what we do, extending out of that is we create community, and we bring people together, and we try to move mountains with community. So, I get really inspired by that.
And speaking of practice, Emily is going to do a 5 to 10 minute practice to lead us out.
So find a comfortable seat. And if you prefer to lay down, you can lay down. Just get a sense of where you are in space. The eyes can close, but notice the connection that you have to the floor. Notice what parts of the body are touching the floor. And then notice which parts of the body feel light, expansive, exposed. And get a sense of any sounds that you hear in the room. And the feeling on the skin, the surface of the body. Maybe warm, maybe cold. Maybe a little bit of both. And maybe there's a little bit of a breeze. Just locating yourself in space. Let's together take a big breath in. Feel the belly rise, expand, chest expands, and then out the mouth, let it go. Take one more like that, big breath in, expand the belly, expand the chest. And then exhale, let it go. Now relax the control of the breath. Let the control go. Let's see if you can observe here that you are breathing and that your breath is being moved, rather your body is being moved by the breath. So some breaths are longer, some breaths shorter. Sometimes a pause in between. So you use the breath as a tool to come back to your body, to where you are right now. And you'll notice that thoughts definitely come into the experience and pull you out of your body. That's because you're human. And you have a brain. You have a mind. So do your best to notice the thoughts as they come into the experience. Hold space for whatever thoughts come in. Acknowledge the thoughts. And then with your attention, gently pull your attention back to the feeling that you're breathing in and breathing out. And what happens when you notice the breath is that often there will be a bigger, longer inhale and an exhale. But then allow the breath to take on a natural rhythm again. Notice where in the body you feel that movement of breath. It might be the belly, might be the chest. It might be the nostrils, the tips of the nostrils. Then again, you'll notice another thought pull your focus out of the body and into things you have to do, things you've done. And just notice where your mind goes. And let the practice be this coming back. So you're cultivating the ability to come back to the feeling that you are breathing in and breathing out. So the goal is not to remove the thoughts. It's not to have no thoughts, but it's to notice that there is that activity of thoughts rolling in. And then the choice to shift the focus back to breathing in and breathing out. Which sometimes can happen a million times over. And the practice is that you notice when you get taken away by thought, by a storyline, a narrative. You notice where your mind goes. And you use your ability to shift focus, to redirect your attention, your focus back to your breathing. You allow yourself even a few moments where the to-do list can wait. The things that you've done that you could have, should have, would have done differently. Can be set aside. And you're right here. With your breath. And if you lose yourself in thought, take one sharper inhale and exhale to reestablish that connection. And you're right back. Back to the sensation of your body connecting to the floor. Notice which parts of the body are heavy, grounded, and then which parts of the body feel exposed and light, expansive. Coming back into the room, get a sense of, even though your eyes are closed, a sense of the wall in front of you, the wall behind you, to your right and to your left. And if you're outside, maybe you're getting a sense of a tree that's in front of you, the space that's in front of you, behind you. right, left. Get a sense of the space above you, whether that is a ceiling or a sky. And then almost as if you could allow your attention to zoom way, way out. As if you could see your body as a little dot on the earth. And that little dot expanding and softening with each breath. With all this wide open space, the ability to observe thoughts drift in and thoughts drift out. Breath drift in and drift out. If you could zoom your attention right back into that point where you feel the breath moving in. Maybe it's, let's all go to the nostril area. Feel the breath moving in and moving out. Start to wiggle the toes and the fingers. Just bringing a little bit more awareness into the limbs. Wake the body up a little bit by deepening your inhales and your exhales. Moving the spine just a little bit. And then when you're ready, gently blink the eyes open and allow your focus to see what's around you.
Dentalk's podcast would not exist without these incredible people, Nicole Rappi, Reem Edon, Hayden Fungheiser, Kim Bielek, and music by Alex Fetter.
Thanks for joining us. If you haven't subscribed, please do. And also, wherever you listen, please go and leave us a review. It's so greatly appreciated. It really does help us out. If you want to keep talking about all this stuff, please join our community on our secret Facebook page. Go to Facebook, search Dentalk's podcast, and join us there.